G2. Number 2A.
I have been asking about the last chart which I had about the horizontal and the vertical, how much of it was my reading into it and how much was what the world is thinking today. Well, from that chart with the last one with the horizontal and vertical with the green and red, see, is all from work of these scientists. There is nothing which I have interpreted into it. It's all from other scientists. That's the question I have been asked. Now, naturally, if we have seen in the last hour that something terrific must have happened in the whole world, you see, which had as its effect that a linear, horizontal, causal, additive way of being has suddenly been turned upside into a vertical, what one would call a exponential development instead of a linear one, naturally demands that we meet this world with a completely new consciousness. We can never really meet the new problems with the methods of yesterday. If the world is changing, then we can't try and cope with a changing world with the same method and with the same structure of consciousness as in earlier times. So the great question which we will discuss together, or which in a monologue, so to say, I'm thinking over and over, is the stages of development of consciousness which were necessary and are necessary in the main to cope with such a new development. I tried here to show the whole program of today and tomorrow. I called it the status of development of consciousness, and don't take it as dogmatic, as something which has actually 8 points and can't have 7 or can't have 9. It's just a way of thinking and reasoning which seems to have come through our study, and it would start, so to say, in the earlier times of the atomistic thinking. Atomistic thinking, I mean thinking in isolated parts, in isolated truths, like little bits in the immensity of the being. Then from the atomistic thinking we have come to the linear thinking, began to see sequence from these various points. Then I think what I would call the functional thinking, if it's the right term or not, I am not sure myself, it doesn't matter. The thing which matters is what happened. Then fourth, the operational thinking, and really then comes the interesting turning point. I think up to here we had this very much this operational sense, and with up to here we had very much this horizontal sense, and then the turning point to the vertical with the structural consciousness, which includes really the dimensional consciousness, the cybernetic consciousness, and the comprehensive consciousness. This is the layout of what I'm going to show, and so I am going to start with the first one, with the atomistic thinking. Now, before I do that, actually, I must say that all these new steps which we are considering have a upward trend. You can see that it comes from the atomistic to the comprehensive sense, from the sense of wholeness, and that naturally this does embrace a whole range of steps of consciousness, and that with every step of consciousness also our practice, our demonstration change. We can't have a different kind of consciousness and not to have a different kind of what we call demonstration, or what we call practice, or life experience. So that with every new step, naturally, without that I may say it every time, we can feel that something quite new is being tackled in life experience, in the world experience. That with every higher order, if that is the way of higher, with every higher order, naturally a higher sense of demonstration comes in. Or I could say that with every higher order, the demonstration has a greater impact on being, on the world. And it would also mean that with every higher order, naturally, we are not demonstrating what we want, but with every step we can see that that which is demonstrated is what the comprehensive sense of being wants to be demonstrated. Therefore, it is at the same time, it is a line of how the personal I is resolved into the I Am, into the divine I Am, and that divine I Am has naturally quite different purposes of demonstration than the little I Am, the little I. Alright, so this is the program, and we start somehow with the atomistic thinking. You can take the next one. Whatever we are somehow interested in is always the infinite being. The infinite is the subject, no matter on which level we are thinking, but the infinite as the infinite is the main point. I try to symbolize the infinite with a circle, because I guess that is the best symbol for the infinite. Now, the mystics try right from the beginning to be comprehensivists without having all the necessary constituents of being. They try to take the whole as a whole. And in order to take the whole as a whole, one should have to be bigger than the whole, or one can't embrace it. And this is already the irrational way of seeing that mysticism can never really lead us anywhere. It is trying to have a diffuse, undifferentiated whole. It is just an empty whole. There is nothing in it except the infinite. And it is that nirvana, that nothingness, of which Eastern philosophy speaks. And so the mystics try just to get the whole as a whole. And this is not possible. Or else we would have to be bigger than the whole. So the next step that I think one could see was religion. Religion said, yes, there is a whole. There is the same whole here, you see, as here. But religion has seen, I must see the various truths of divinity, or of God, or of man, or of being, or of existence, or whatever it is. And this is indicated by these dots. These are the atoms. That's the atomistic thinking, which says, yes, there is an infinite whole, and there are infinite truths, plural, infinite truths. And so if I'm a jolly good student, I'm going to learn these truths. One by one by one by one by one by one. And in a lifetime, I can gather together quite a lot of truths. And it is that point where one has a special liking for the verse so-and-so in the Bible and the verse so-and-so in the Psalm and the statement on page so-and-so in the textbook and so on, and one has those nice truths. And they are really truths. They can be considered to be truths. I question it, but let's say they are truths. And they help people. And they can be of great comfort. And in agony and in a crisis or in anything, people can hold on to just this verse. And you have heard how people have been helped and helped and helped and comforted by just holding on to this and that statement. So there is something good about it, something true about it, but it is atomistic thinking. It is here a truth, there a truth, and there is not really any sense of science in it. Yes. It is there where you say, give me a good thought. It is there where one says, what shall I think? And through the telephone calls, just think about this, 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 and gives one of these statements. This is atomistic thinking. Well, how far does it go? Naturally, it doesn't go very far because it hasn't any science in it. All these points, really, which you can see, have no connection with the whole. They are isolated facts and have no connection with the whole. Therefore, they don't reflect the whole. That's why I said, are they really truths? Until they are seen as related to the whole. They aren't. They are absolutely unrelated to the whole, and if they are unrelated to the whole, they don't exist. Because the whole is the main thing. And the whole is indivisible, and therefore a fact which is not considered from the point of view of the whole is not really a fact. So, in order to have a relation to the whole, we must somehow use the method of science. So here you have again the infinite. It's always the same, infinite. But here, naturally, you have not dots on it, you have not isolated facts on it, but you have categories. In other words, what we have done is this, that on this one, you see, you have dots like here, and here, and here, and here, and here. Can you see that? Perhaps you can, huh? And here, and here, and here. See, take for instance these. You can have millions of single facts there, and yet they are not single facts anymore. They are one. They are one category. They have one common denominator already. They are on the same category, at the same longitude or latitude, you see. They are all on the same one. And so, in this way, we can do something which is terrific. We can already take a redundant universe and reduce it to simple categories. We can take the infinite truth here and reduce it to just some categories. Be it the categories here, if that would be the globe of the longitude and of the latitude, and if we have just a few categories of longitude and latitude, every point on the whole globe can be clearly defined. Everyone. So instead of having infinite truths, I begin to see that I can take that absolutely redundant universe and through the principle of redundancy reduce it to some simple categories. I can form what we could say super symbols, I can take all these million points and truths here and can say they have just one common denominator, and this is this category. And so the same thing I can do with a category like here, or like here, or like here, and it only needs very few categories, say on the globe, to define everyone of the practically infinite points on the globe. So this is the method of science. The method of science is not interested in single facts. The method of science takes the multitude, the infinitude of truths, and says, I'm not interested in them, except that I like to see how I can categorize them, classify them. This is the great point that science does in every field of science. This is what Mrs. Eddy has done. This is an enormous work, an enormous insight to take the whole infinite being, which the mysticism looks at as just one whole, which the religionist looks at it as many, 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 many memorized truths, but which the scientist simplifies it to just some few categories. Let me see this. If I take one of these, I go back to religion. I said, if I take one of these points, they do not mean anything. They are not really, what I would say, even a truth, because they don't lend itself to proper interpretation. Let me show this in this way. Let me show, say, like a film. Let's take just one shot. Say, this whole thing is a film you see for 2 hours. And in this film there are thousands, thousands, thousands of little shots in it. Can you say shots in it?
Yeah.
See. Let's say this little point here is just a shot of perhaps 2 seconds. Let's say you see suddenly for 2 seconds that shot, and it says there is a big highway. On that big highway there is a racing car coming along, a Rolls Royce with terrific speed coming along, and suddenly the brakes and stops, and one jumps out of that car and goes into the next house, runs into the next house like mad. The other is just sitting there ready with the car, and then comes back. Finished. What does it mean? Everyone can now tell exactly what I have said. For the road, it was a car, it was a Rolls Royce, it was terrific speed. There were 2 people, one on the wheel, the other was jumping out, the other was going into the house. There is no doubt about it. Can be easily defined, can absolutely, unmistakably define what happened. And yet, do we know what happened? We don't. Not a single one knows now out of this what really happened. And yet, the situation is well defined. Now think of that. Sometimes we have a case in practice, it's well defined what the case is. But how to interpret it? We have the faintest clue in this film what it means. The one is thinking, oh, it is a robber. They just quickly went into the house and murdered the old woman and took the money away and off they went. You see? And the other was saying, perhaps they just came from the airfield and saw that they didn't have the passport and had to rush back to fetch the passport. What is the difference? You see, this is a tragedy. This is a tragedy. We have been reading the textbook and the Bible that way. The religionist reads it that way. He reads this point. He doesn't read it within the whole. Let's read it within the whole. Only then, really, you see, what makes the true interpretation? Though you are absolutely clear, everyone in here will be absolutely clear what happened. But what gives the interpretation? The interpretation is that you must have somehow a story running along. And within that story, you have this incident here, which I was telling you. The incident itself, this point, this atomistic thinking, was very clear. Each one could see what it is. But there was no interpretation, no interpretare, no putting in between what. He had to see all the points here and here and here and here and here and here until finally, perhaps at the end, he begins to see what happened here. If he sees the story and sees the right point of intersection, he can interpret the right what happened there. Absolutely. Therefore, it shows that a point like this does not exist as a truth. A point, not even in geometry, does a point exist. A point like I make it here is a surface, not a point. A point is always the intersection of two categories at the right place. Let's say the man who is putting together that film, is it called a cutter, I think, in the film industry? Let's say he makes a mistake and puts this very incident which we have been talking about, he puts it, say, here. You see? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense anymore, does it? And yet it is the very same thing which we can define. Well, can you see what is really the meaning of it, the practical meaning of it for us? That reading the Bible or the textbook, whatever it is, see, we can understand each sentence. We can understand each verse. And yet, is that an interpretation? Does it give the whole value? It doesn't yield the whole value. It can only begin to yield the whole value when it is seen as a point at least of interjection of at least two categories, of this one and at the right place of this one. Thank you. See, and this leads us really, you see, leads us really to see, and this is the main point for us which we will make again from time to time during the thing, we will just pinpoint that a truth by itself is not really a truth. That a truth is only a point of intersection of categories. And only interpretable rightly in that way. Take instead of that film. Take instead of that film the number four. We all agree what the four is, do we? No, we don't. This is a four. It doesn't mean a thing. We think it does, because it's a four. Because we think it is 3 plus 1. But that's only one possibility. It can just as well be 7 minus 3. It can just as well be 2 times 2. It can just as well be, what is it, 8 divided by 2. It can just as well be 2, what you call, the square. It can just as well be this. Whatever it is. Can you see what I want to show? What I want to show that is that if we are going to see really what happens today with those horizontal and verticals, that we have to see categories. That we have to see that we take the Bible and the textbook, whatever it is, and not read it as truth this way. Though we know that they are comforting, though we know they are helpful, though we don't want to discard them, they are wonderful for the beginning, they are even wonderful for the advanced. Sometimes when he is in great agony or in great distress, that he just said, I couldn't think anymore but that. But as a scientist, we begin to realize that this single truth by itself don't mean anything until we see categories. Until we see facts and ask ourselves, what are the categories? And only in that way, you see, really, these are categories already. These. The other one, the four, was just the fact. This one. This was addiction. The violet one is already science. But science says, I'm built on categories. These are the categories. Point of intersection. These are point of intersections of various categories. The categories of addition, the categories of subtraction, the categories of multiplication, the categories of division. If we have that, then naturally we have science. And so this leads us really on right up to science, you see. And this gives us a clue of how we may have to, or how the way we try to see the whole science of being. All right. Now, touching on science, we begin to see that the definition of science really is this, that it is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in system. System you can only have like this here, see? This system, this has no system. So we really see that science, I would say, A, tends to have categories or system, categories. But there is another point. We have seen that if we can have categories and know those categories, if we have the categories, here you see, then we are enabled to be creative. Then we can begin to calculate creatively.